Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 408 of the Roguecast, recorded March 14th, 2023. Little Richard's Almanac.
Buckle up, ladies and gentlemen.
We're tired today.
It's daylight savings time. None of us slept particularly well.
No.
We're all a little loopy.
The result, though, is not that we're, like, completely falling apart. There's a certain weird giddiness.
Yeah, there may be some weird tangents.
Who invented daylight savings time? Was it Ben Franklin?
It was.
Yes, he invented it.
It was Victor Time.
It was Victor Time.
Yes.
Well, no, I'm being serious.
At some point he was inventing electricity when he... No,
he got struck by lightning, and he woke up
I did. It may have been one of his notions.
I think he did that in National Treasure. Wasn't that one of the things that... Like,
I don't know. Was it in Poor Richard's Almanac? Which, by the way, I almost called Little Richard's Almanac, which is a very different thing.
Oh, man. That's like his little black book.
It's just facts from Little Richard.
Some guy named George Hudson did.
Okay. It does seem like one of those things.
Anyways, I want to travel back in time and punch him in the face because I hate daylight savings.
You know, ironically, time travel would not be possible without daylight savings time.
Shut up.
I thought maybe you'd be tied up with that one.
Ben Franklin one of those philanderer guys?
He was a philanderer guy. Yeah.
So, Nick, you could punch him in the face for all the angry husbands, too. And you're like, plus daylight savings, and he'd be like, I didn't do it.
I'm just going to replace his key with a superconductive piece of metal.
Just detonate.
He's full shaggy. He's like, it wasn't me.
I'm pretty sure he's used to that.
Yeah.
But other than that, we have some great information.
But I think, as daylight savings in general, I think, Dave, you and I are mostly daylight savings fans.
Yes.
We like having the light out later so you can, like, do things after work.
Right. If I want to do something like grab a walk while it's still light, I can do that all the way up until, like, 8 or 9 o'clock these days. Yep. But I also do, I'm a fence sitter on this one. I like it when it's darker earlier, and then I go home and I'm, like, in my little happy nightland. And
you go on spoopy walks.
And Nick,
in the dark.
Nick, are you a daylight really savings hater?
I hate losing an hour, and the last couple of times has really messed with my, like, sleeping schedule.
It sounds to me like we're on a spectrum here. I love daylight savings. Dave is mad on it, and you hate it.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. I am, because I am a long-time weird schedule person,
yeah.
I am broadly immune to daylight savings switchovers, immune to jet lag and things like that, because I'm just, my body is in a constant state of that for my whole life. So it's not weird to me at all.
Nothing new, it's just you're always tired.
That's my secret. I'm always tired.
Dave could nap at a heartbeat.
I can't actually do that.
Yeah, the other possibility that the second half of this podcast is going to be snoring as we all pass out.
It's very true.
It's not as warm in the office today, though, so maybe we will not fall into
trouble. I give it, like, 70-30.
Okay, yeah. Anyway.
But, we've got new comics. Y'all are going to talk about Scream later.
Yep.
And
some trailers
to talk about.
We're going to talk about board game. Very on brand for us. We have board games.
Yes. Yeah. Had some fun playing a new board game the other day.
So, first I want to mention, we have a rare signing coming up for us this weekend. On Saturday from noon to 3, we'll have Yehudi Mercado, who did the latest Shazam Thundercrack, the sort of YA... Shazam graphic novel that takes place in movie continuity.
Yeah, and that's a super cool opportunity. You know, Yehudi's done books for independent publishers. Yep. He's done stuff. Has he done stuff at Marvel?
Yes, he has. Well, he's at least done some of it. Yes, he's done some at Marvel. Yep.
But he's had original graphic novels that have been very successful. And now here he's getting to play in the playground of Shazam.
Come out. Bring the teens and tweens and get a signed copy of Thundercrack.
Yeah, I believe this will be an especially fun, family-friendly one. Not like our usual debauchery.
Yes, usually it's adults-only signings.
But I guess we did have a cosplay model last time who did some somewhat risque
images. That's true. That was our last thing. That was after hours. So.
Right, that's right.
Rogues Gallery After Dark.
This is the wholesome side of Rogues Gallery, yes. Which is what we are 90% of the
time. Come out and see the wholesome side of Rogues Gallery.
10% of the time, debauchery.
Debauchery. Rogues Gallery comics games.
Hope you don't open the door at the right time or you'll be like Donald Glover. In Community.
You're referencing a meme from a show you've never seen.
I've seen some bits and pieces of Community.
But never a full episode.
I got the name right? It's the right actor?
You got the right actor.
Yeah.
What was his name on the show?
Harvey?
All right, well, a little bit of game news. We got a game called Astronauts. It's a new one from, I think, it's people who have done good games. I want to say it's people who do cool...
Okay.
Like indie press games, something like that.
We're just spouting the good information
there. And a game called Gardeners look cool.
Yep.
And we got from Kickstarter a game called Excavation Earth, which along with its new expansion, that is basically your aliens digging up artifacts on Earth.
Right. Is it like a destroyed Earth? Or...
Yes, I think so, yes.
Yeah. You get to be the aliens for once, sounds fun.
It comes with a cool metal coin and a bunch of extra pieces, and it's like a big, cool deal. And then we also got this thing, Nightfell, which is a D&D, like, horror setting that calls itself, like, Grimdark, which I'm not used to seeing anything Grimdark used in any but, like, a negative, but they're tagging it, and I was like, this is a Grimdark setting for horror.
I think, I was telling you, I think the other day, that I want to say some, partially because of stuff like Warhammer, Warhammer 40K, and sort of, like, really overtly... grimdark properties like Dark Souls and Elden Ring and stuff like that. Yep. I suspect if it's coming into use at all, it's because of stuff like that sort of embrace knowingly that kind of metal attitude.
Right, like Morkborg.
Like Morkborg, or even like what's the video games where you fight the gods and stuff?
Oh,
God of War?
Yeah, God of War. I feel like that's, you could describe that as grimdark sometimes.
Yeah, I get that.
Anyway, let's
talk about comics for the week of March 15th.
Yes.
Let's talk about the newest expansion of the Massiverse, No/One.
Mm-hmm. Massiverse, which started with Radiant Black and has gone on to like Radiant Red, Radiant Pink,
Rogue Sun,
and some others. Yeah, this
Eternal
is like
Girl.
And a series we've broadly been recommending to people who are fans of sort of indie superheroes like Invincible.
This one's a departure for them because it takes place in Pittsburgh. And it is about a vigilante named No One who basically, he doxxed a bunch of rich people.
Uh-huh.
And then someone kind of went nuts and killed a bunch of these rich people. Basically, the thing is, like, there was no accountability. So he went with a pistol and killed these people. And then he has been arrested, and his dad, a police detective, there's a lot of sort of things going on of like, oh... people think his dad should resign because he must have known his son was a murderer, and the son is like, it's not entirely clear if he did it, and the vigilante like tried to stop someone from killing him. So it's what's happening, the central thing is there's a reporter for the Pittsburgh newspaper who they're like, hey, we want you to come on and do sort of a true crime serial style podcast about No One and these killings and this killer, and she's skeptical of it, but it's basically going to be a podcast about vigilante justice, and it has an actual podcast that goes with it,
like a real In Our World podcast
with Patton Oswalt and who's the
lady is. It's on one of the last few pages.
I think they Julia Page, but that's
is it Rachel Lee Cook?
Is Rachel Lee Cook? Yes,
from She's All That fame.
Probably the notable thing about this is that the art is gorgeous. It really reminds me of sort of Sean Phillips' stuff.
Yeah, and it's I think people who. It has a suspense crime vibe, so, you know, if you are a sort of Brubaker fan, or you enjoy the kind of, like, you know, suspense mystery format, you know, or crime dramas, I think there's something that could be up your way. It's obviously, you know, crime drama by way of superhero.
Yeah, it's interesting. DC has a couple new books this week. Superman Lost, number one, which is Priest.
Yep.
And, Dave, what's that one about?
What I remember from making the sign is... There's a sort of a mystery involving Superman's identity in this. I don't think you're like getting inside his head. I think you're seeing.
Oh, no, they're not going to reveal his identity again, are they?
No, it's he goes off on like some mission into deep space where he's going to be gone for like, I don't know, like a month or two, but then like shows up at his, you know, home the next day, and Lois is like, there's some question of like, is this him? Like, you just left. You're supposed to be gone for like 2 months or a month or whatever, and he's like, I'm back, and. There's something weird, maybe mysterious about it. Now he may be still a central character, but I get the impression it may be a little bit more told from like the Justice League and Lois and stuff around him.
Yeah.
Anyway, sounded potentially interesting.
So this is not a story of Superman going out in space and getting lost.
It is not.
It might
be. He's like, I don't know how to get back to Earth.
There is one of the covers that looked like that. Yeah. He looks like he like flew out into space and he's like, wait, how do you tell where anything is out here?
Wait, who am I?
He also slightly looked like he was like, did I leave the oven on?
Or he flew out in space and like space cabbie ran him over. And
if I were a superhero, I would be a guy who would fly out into space and be like, shit. Where is Krypton or wherever I'm going?
Do you think space cabbies ever had a hit and run?
Yes.
100%.
I'm sure yes.
Here's a question to our audience. Are you familiar with the fact that there exists a character named Space Cabbie? It's an obscure DC character, kind of even by DC standards.
But you know what?
I feel like Tom King's grimdarked him up lately.
Oh, probably so.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, in terms of like characters that names tells you what they are.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
You don't get much clearer than Space Cabbie.
It's true.
That like, is
what,
true.
What's Space Cabbie? He's a guy who drives a cab in space. That is what he is.
Do you think he's been going up against Space Uber?
Yeah, Space Uber is really, really throwing things off for him.
Then there's Space Lyft, and what do you about that?
And the Green Lantern Corps has their own service, their shuttle service, I think.
Space Green?
They've unionized.
Yeah. There's also Harley Quinn screws up the DCU, number one. The wacky screwball Harley Quinn where she screws up the DCU.
This is part of, like, weirdly, the... Lazarus thing, right?
Is it?
Is it?
It is. Like I saw it. Like it has like the Lazarus label. Weird. So, but that said, it's clearly they're one of their. It's like a fun side project. It's okay. not a part of the serious stuff. It is a, you know, it is kind of a Harley Quinn with Time Machine messing about.
I see.
I believe.
We don't talk about promotional stuff as much that often, but. I think those Dawn of DC posters we got, people should definitely take a look at those. We put them all up on the windows. They look
they're
super
really cool.
They are paired, right?
They're paired. Yeah. There's like the legacy character and then the new character. So it's like the Green Lantern one has
Hal
Janelle Monáe, Green Lantern, whose name we never know. Joe?
Far Sector.
Joe?
Is Joe something?
Joe something.
But we can call her Far Sector Green Lantern in a pinch.
Yep. And she's cool. And so like there's that. There's the Shazam one has Billy, but also another Shazam. I don't think I know.
Is it Freddy?
Is it Freddy? It might be a new Freddy, but it's a different looking Freddy. The Aquaman one has Aquaman and also Aqualad, the new Aqualad.
Yep.
And they're all pretty cool. There's a legacy one that's got like a new Birds of Prey, and then of course the Teen Titans.
They have a sort of a pop art look, right? Like you know,
they're all Dan Mora.
Oh yeah, Dan Mora. Who, you know, we took notice of him back when he was doing Klaus for who was that? IDW.
Yep.
Boom.
No,
whatever.
Boom.
You know, Grant Morrison's superhero/barbarian version of Santa.
Yep.
Which was really good, and we miss.
Yep.
Come back to us, Grant.
Yes.
But yeah, he's been. You know, he worked on most recently with Mark Waid on the Superman Batman book. He's a good guy to be like. To be one of your sort of showpiece artists to like draw everybody in the DC universe,
yeah,
he's good at that stuff.
Yeah, and then we've got Batman Joker Deadly Duo. They all that's been out of print, but they did a reprint of 1-3 all together,
mm-hmm.
So and we like still have 4 and 5, so you can actually get the whole story if you want to.
I like when DC does that. They did that with Dark Knights of Steel, and I feel like they did something.
Yeah,
one
it's
of
a
the
good reprint
ones.
Format.
Oh, DC versus Vampires.
And just real quick, if you don't remember what that is a story in which it's part of DC's Black Label line, so it's out of continuity.
Yep.
But that also means they can push some edges and boundaries. And but in this one, it's essentially a story which forces Joker and Batman to team up.
Yep, right? And Mark Silvestri is writing and drawing, I believe.
Yeah, if you remember him from his X-Men days or Cyberforce, I imagine there's a fair number of people who might want to pick it up just for his art.
You will remember Ripclaw.
No one remembers Ripclaw.
I kind of remember Ripclaw.
Is it Strongarm? Who's the guy who has the cybernetic arms, but it's like there's three on one side and there's regular arm on the other?
I have a figure.
Was the fast-running lady Velocity?
It was Velocity. Kusick did a Velocity miniseries.
Forearm was the mutant from the...
Yeah, you're right. He's a Rob Liefeld guy.
What the heck was that?
Was
Striker?
Striker.
Striker. Why do I remember this?
I don't know. He had one regular arm, and then he had like three cyber arms on his right side.
Three cyber arms, because that's...
Like he must like walk like a limp, right? Like he's like tilts to the side when he walks.
Or maybe he's kind of gotten used to it, and he has a cool stride.
Maybe so.
Is it Indigo, or was that a wet work?
That might have been
a wet work.
No, well, I guess so, but yeah, I can... All of those were colored with the then burgeoning computer coloring.
Yes.
But yes,
I'm saying I guess Silvestri has made his mark upon my brain.
Yes, we know some of Cyberforce.
But he also drew X-Men during the Outback era.
Oh, yeah.
He drew the Mutant Massacre stuff. Like this is pretty big stuff.
Yep. We have another image book from Greg Rucka and Eric Troutman. And who's the artist on this? Mike Henderson. Called The Forged.
It's an oversized thing that is meant to look a little size-wise, emulate something like a old Conan or Heavy Metal magazine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Heavy Metal maybe being the biggest influence on this, which is kind of unusual for Rucka, who usually kind of does crime stuff. Even his previous future story, Lazarus, was a somewhat down-to-earth thing.
Yes. Is this again kind of emulating kind of Warhammer?
A little bit.
Because like, the back of it is like, we are born to serve her exalted majesty, we are bred to obey her divine radiance.
They are sort of warrior nuns in a way.
And it has that, and definitely, Randy, you're correct, there's influences from the movie Aliens with Colonial Marines.
Yep.
But it's kind of like his own sci-fi setting. Their promotion for it made it sound trashier than it looked. But I do think that Rucka wants to be able to have a little bit more sex and violence in this and have some fun with it.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, I don't think, like, didn't he, like, actually take a break from writing Lazarus, which is really depicts a rather grim future of feudal mega families that own, like, seven families own the whole world.
I get that idea.
It's like, you know, if the mega corporations that run the world formerly ran the world, and everybody else was like freaking serfs, just laboring for them.
Yep.
An exaggerated version of our present day. And I think it was too grimdark for him to, like, he had to pause on it.
He did.
And this seems like him having a little bit more fun with the sci-fi setting.
That's good.
Good for him. Have some fun. have the warrior nuns that you've been wanting to write forever.
There is a there's Star Trek number 5 this week and Star Trek Resurgence, but Star Trek number 5 has a notable turning point in it and spins off into a new book called Star Trek Defiant, which is led by Worf. I don't want to give too much away on this. This is sort of the post Deep Space Nine, post Voyager Star Trek.
Yep.
Pre Picard.
And it has the ship, the Defiant, which was like the battle cruiser of choice during the Dominion War on Deep Space Nine. It is a hard-hitting little ship.
So we've talked about the Star Trek series, and Dave, you have not read it because you didn't want to read it before you finished Deep Space Nine.
Right, which I've now finished, but I haven't had a chance to go back.
But I'm really liking the new Star Trek series. It is sort of a best of. It's got Sisko's running a ship. Mm-hmm. Old Scotty is his engineer. Tom Paris is his pilot. It's got a lot of... They're taking advantage of the fact that they can use these characters, and even though the actors who have played them have died, they can still use the characters. Well, they're doing the same thing as Star Trek Defiant, because Defiant, I'm not going to give too much away, but it's on the cover. Through a series of circumstances, Worf has to steal the Defiant.
Okay.
He does this with the assistance of Ambassador Spock.
Oh, okay.
And he also enlists war criminal Ensign Ro.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And there's another person you might recognize on the cover as a sort of constant Star Trek bad guy who's in there as well. But they're not revealed to the very end, so I don't want to say anything just in case.
Randy, let me quick ask you this, because you're about halfway through Deep Space Nine, or a little more. Do you know that, have I told you, or maybe you just already know, that Kira was originally supposed to be Ensign Ro?
I do know this, yes.
And so like, her kind of, like, edgy support of the Maquis and all that stuff, it just got sort of transferred over conceptually to Kira. Now, Kira for sure is her own character,
but she was Ro. I mean, it was supposed to be Ro.
Totally.
Also, B'Elanna, the Klingon who is Tom Paris.
Yeah.
Paris.
Tom Berenger.
She and... What?
Nothing. It sounded like you were starting to say Tom Berenger.
No. She and Paris have a discussion here because Paris is on the other ship, and now she's going to be on the Defiant. And so this is like another best of... And
the Voyager characters, I have some fondness for Voyager, and the Voyager inclusion of Voyager characters makes me more interested in it.
This also feels a little darker. It does feel a little Section 31.
Yep.
Which I'm not sure where you're going to land on that. It's almost a little too dark for me, but Deep Space Nine has that as well, and it kind of works for me.
Okay. I'll maybe check it out. Now, let me ask you this, Randy. Would I be able to read Defiant without having read the other one?
Yes, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I would go ahead and read the other Star Trek first.
Okay.
This is very much a spinoff.
Got it.
Marvel does have a new book this week. We've talked about all the other stuff, but they have Hellcat number 1. This is by Christopher Cantwell, who also wrote Defiant, who had been writing Iron Man and had been writing Hellcat as a member of it. And this is sort of his Hellcat spinoff. I think we all kind of think Hellcat must be a favorite character of his.
Yeah. Makes some sense.
This is really nice artwork.
And I think we can say this because it was in the the solicit for it, I want to say, is that it guest stars one of Marvel's obscure 90s characters and a favorite of Nick.
It's true.
A Sleepwalker. They're kind of, I'm going to say, more action-oriented Sandman. I forget, Nick. Is he a person who, when he dreams, he could become this hero or like, enter people's dreams?
They're two separate entities. Rick is the guy who is, like, allows the dream form to become a reality, kind of. But they're two separate entities. And, yeah.
Like a Firestorm kind of deal?
A little bit.
Okay.
I think it's more Captain Marvel Rick Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
worth noting that Secret Invasion wraps up this week. I think Dave and I both really like that wrap up.
Yep.
And that there's a second issue of TMNT, The Last Ronin, Last Years.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple interesting collections this week. There is a big hardcover, The Legend of Drizzt Visual Dictionary, which is a time to come out with a D&D movie.
Yep.
But
it leads me to wonder if indeed Drizzt will be cameoing in some way there or in a post credit sequence.
I think we're all guessing or hoping that Drizzt and or Minsk and Boo will be in the movie somehow. That'd be so
good. I have to lower my expectations, though. I don't want to get my hopes up.
Sure. Well, you know, the thing is, for me, the movie wouldn't... you know, I'd like to see Minsk and Boo, but I can already tell if the movie is able to keep up with the scenes I've seen from it, then I'm not going to need, you know, cameos.
But if the movie's super great, everything's good about it, but no Minsk and Boo, you are going to throw tomatoes at the screen at the end.
Yes.
And be like, what was that bullshit? Where's Minsk and Boo?
I think people know who Drizzt is pretty well, but he's kind of like the Wolverine character of the D&D lore. He is a dark elf, most of which are bad guys in D&D, turned good. He's a badass fighter, and he's got all kinds of cool allies and stuff.
He's got a panther.
There's been so much lore to him that they made one of these DK Books visual dictionaries, and it's really very cool. Aside from, like, having, you know, if you've ever had one of their Star Wars ones or anything else that they've ever zeroed in on, like, I've got a Bond one, too. They do, like, it's sort of like infotainment, like a good encyclopedia with lots and lots of great artwork. Usually they get unprecedented access to archives so that they can, like, do the best of the best art. And little sort of like they label them, you know. Yeah. There's all this like, oh, there's this little the scarf he's wearing that was actually taken from the Goblin Lord and blah blah blah. Yeah. They'll fill in all kinds of neat detail like that. And this one, in addition to talking about Drizzt himself and his like allies, talks a lot about the what's the town or
Icewind Dale,
where he comes from,
and has a bunch of monsters. Like there's a section on mind flayers and other monsters that kind of stuff.
And
it's
also
a D&D book,
the Underdark since he's a drow. So there's actually tons of cool D&D info here. Like, it's the kind of thing, I think I would have particularly liked this as a kid.
Yeah, it's really cool.
But, like, even now, it's impressive, and I think anybody who's a fan of Drizzt really needs to go ahead and just get it.
Yeah. I also want to mention that the Parker Girls trade is out, which is the sort of, like, hooker crime espionage ring that Terry Moore created for Strangers in Paradise.
Yep.
Sort of a sequel to Strangers in Paradise.
The lurid backdrop for the otherwise romantic triangle kind of comic that it was involved sort of a sinister, what would she used to be, a madam?
Uh-huh.
Pimp? I don't know what you want to call her. And her, like, bodyguard and her assassins and stuff like that. And they end up taking sort of center stage here.
Yep,
this is a
conspiracy involving an Elon Musk-style billionaire. And his wife, who was a Parker Girl, is murdered, and they think he did it, and so there's a big investigation going on around that. It's really, really good, and reminds me how much I like Terry Moore's stuff.
Yep.
You don't have to have read Strange in Paradise, because I never finished it, to enjoy this, but if you like Catch You and you want to see more of her, she is in this again, and if you like the idea of a sort of, like, Charlie's Angels-esque organization of hot girls being smarter than the men that they're taking on, this is good for that, too.
There was also the first volume of Dark Ride.
Yes, Dark Ride. Forgot to grab that.
Yeah.
Dark Ride.
Which one is Dark Ride?
It's the horror Disneyland.
Oh yeah.
Was it Joshua Williamson?
Yes. It's the same creative team that did Birthright.
Right.
We were enjoying that book. I'm behind.
And all the ones we have come with a signed book plate in
them. Mm-hmm.
So you signed by their
own. Oh.
It's a horror Disneyland that basically it seems like maybe the Walt Disney made a deal with the devil to make it successful.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's really good. All right, let's take a break real quick, and then we're going to come back and talk about some trailers and some news and that kind of thing. right, we got a few trailers to talk about.
Yep.
Let's talk first. And these are, none of these are particularly, they're a little bit off the beaten path for us.
Right, it's not like a big Marvel teaser or Scream or whatever. No. It's the Dredge. What do we got?
So there's an Indie Films movie called Paint.
Yes.
All right.
Which has Owen Wilson.
Yep.
Playing what I thought was going to be like a Bob Ross biopic, like kind of like that Mr. Rogers thing that they did.
Right. Yeah. Maybe a slightly stylized biopic, yeah, but still a biopic.
Like an uplifting thing about Bob Ross and how he, you know, inspired all of us.
Yep.
This is instead, he's like a selfish painter who's mad because there's a new woman painter played by Rosario Dawson. I think Rosario Dawson?
No, it's Ciara Renee.
Really?
Okay.
Yep.
But he's Bob Ross-esque.
He's Bob Ross, well, except he's a mean jerk.
Is he,
It reminds me of kind of like an indie take on Anchorman.
Yeah, it also feels like...
I think that's not a bad way to put it.
It also feels a little Wes Anderson in some ways.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's only because of his presence. But also, it's quirky looking. It's like a little quirky, little indie comedy that sort of, juxtaposes his mild manners with kind of him not being the greatest guy in the world. I actually don't know anything about Bob Ross. I've always been under the impression that, like Mr. Rogers, he actually was pretty wholesome. He really did rescue squirrels and stuff like that, and commune with nature. But I mean, he was constantly stoned, probably. I'm constantly communing with nature.
I'm just kind of curious. I was looking to see. He was in the military, just like Mr. Rogers.
Or at least just like the myth of Mr. Rogers.
No, Mr. Rogers was in the military, wasn't he?
No.
That's fake?
That's fake.
Damn it.
Fake news. He was not a Marine sniper who killed a bunch of people and had to wear long sleeves shirts to cover up his Marine Corps tattoos.
Oh, I hate that. I want that to be true.
No, it's not true.
Well, anyway, Bob Ross was
like a Presbyterian minister.
Bob Ross was a Air Force. He rose to the rank of Master Sergeant.
Oh.
And then he became a painter. And I was working as a part-time bartender.
Master Sergeant, that means he had to be, like, barking out orders at some point.
Sure, yeah.
He must have been the most mild-mannered...
Paint me some trees!
No, I think he was telling him to, like, blow up those trees. That's why he had to atone the rest of his life.
You think he blew up a lot of trees?
Yeah, I think so.
And that's why he had to paint more of them in the world.
He's like, as Tom King is to comics...
You think he was haunted?
Yes, by his dark deeds. Anyway, it's the story we're going
to
go with.
This one looks a little weird to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I like Owen Wilson. Bob Ross seems like a fun figure.
Yep.
He's not Bob Ross. He's just Bob Ross-esque.
His name is Carl.
Watch the trailer. See how you feel about it. Make your own decisions.
Make the call.
Maybe in your world there's a little tree there. Maybe there's not.
Maybe there's not.
We can all approach this one very Bob Ross.
Then there is the trailer for American Born Chinese, which is
was like a teaser trailer.
This is very much a teaser. And this was very much a, hey, we're Disney Plus and we got the entire cast of Everyone Everywhere All at Once except for Jamie Lee Curtis and David Hong.
Yeah.
Now,
don't know about the David Hong.
We don't know for sure, but it wouldn't shock me, yeah.
Quick rewind. The comic that it is based on, a graphic novel, is by Jin Yang.
Yep.
And tell me about it because I haven't read it. What's the quick?
I loved it, but I don't remember a lot of it. I didn't reread it, but it is... It's
autobiographical?
It's semi-autobiographical. But as a kid who, like, he comes to America, or, you know, he's born in America, and he's going to high school, and he's sort of dealing with sort of racism and that kind of thing. But he sort of gets around it by having this rich fantasy life about, like, the Monkey King and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, sort of bringing in the sort of lore of, wushu kind of stuff.
And this trailer is all about the lore. Like, it very much looks like we see Michelle Yao being the martial artist badass kind of thing.
Right. At a glance, it looks like a sequel to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Or Everything Everywhere All at Once.
And yeah, but then you do see, like, yes, there's stuff in the present day, and you kind of get the impression that, okay, yes, this is sort of a fantasy life version of it. But there's so much of it in the trailer, you could be forgiven for thinking it actually is a Chinese fantasy movie.
What's interesting is that, like, they've got Stephanie Hsu and Ki-Hoi Kwan and Michelle Yeoh. But if I'm correct, those are all going to be, like, the parents and maybe, like, the older sister. Because, like, the lead, if it's Jing Lin Wang, is an Asian teenager.
Right.
And I feel like we didn't even see that in the trailer.
Right, like they just did, like, this was the one that was really meant to key off of, maybe put together somebody hastily even,
yeah.
to key off of what they had, an Oscar win they hoped to get, and did get.
Yeah, they swept the Oscars, basically. Yeah.
And good job. Good job on that.
Yeah,
good
movie. Great. I need to rewatch that movie.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm excited for this because I really like the graphic novel. Even if they drove far afield, it's hard to go wrong with that cast.
Yeah.
And Disney Plus is a pretty good track record so far, so... Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing more of the trailer, because this does not really give you a sense of what it is. It's just got some cool visuals and stuff.
Yeah.
We did get the full trailer. We have a teaser already, but we did get the full trailer for Little Mermaid, the new live-action Disney. Yep. And
we were discussing this off-air, and it or off-mic, and it was like one of those things where, you know, I'll say this. I think that whenever I see a Disney live-action trailer or something now, there's a common reaction among every... fan, everybody online, and most people I know, which is a groan.
Like,
and like, I know somebody is seeing these, and I think it's like sort of not like heavily the nerd community. I think it's like families and stuff like
100%.
That. 100%. And Randy and I were kind of talking about like who are they making them for? Because we've all kind of liked some of them, thought the others were mediocre. Randy is burned out. I'm open to it. But it does look like this is one of those ones that, like Beauty and the Beast, or dare I say it, Lion King, looks close enough that I'm not quite sure why they did it other than to slightly rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure they need to be. I had a discussion with a friend about this last night. Basically, maybe, like, do some sequels, do reimaginings. They're so close to what the animated movies are, and the animated movies don't need remaking. They're all really good. Like, Little Mermaid was a phenomenon when it came out. It was like,
it was
reinvigorated their animation.
Just as a random example, though. Let me, I'm going to devil's advocate for
you. All right, sure.
Because Disney needs protection.
Yes. All hail Lord Disney.
So I know you rewatched Aladdin recently, Randy, and didn't like it as much.
It did not hold up for me.
I remember liking it. I'd have to see it to see how I felt, how I feel now. But
yeah.
They did give more agency to Jasmine.
Jasmine, that is true.
Among
that
other things,
nice,
they
nice
actually
update.
Wrote a new song
and,
for her,
and also more backstory for Genie.
More backstory for Genie. Rand and I were saying, Nick, and I kind of like this idea. Mulan, which I think all of us liked to varying stripes.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I think it's not particularly beloved because Mulan the movie is so well liked that a lot of people felt that this kind of lacked the charm of it.
Yeah.
But what it was like a Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon kind of action fantasy, which I thought some good acting and some heartfelt stuff and some new ideas in it. The whole sorceress was a complete,
right.
The evil sorceress was a completely new thing. But we were wondering if they shouldn't have all kind of, like, do no songs in any of them. Go ahead and have a somewhat unified vision of saying that these were, like, this is our somewhat more serious take for, like, slightly older kids and up.
Yeah.
That would, capture the stories and hopefully the charm of the characters, but wouldn't engage with the kind of the whimsical side of it as much as the cartoons did. And I was like, I kind of wish that had been, like, obviously they're too far in to change anything. But I think I might have liked that approach.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
it's what, like, I'd say Jungle Book and Mulan and maybe not quite Aladdin, but Aladdin didn't have songs, so it's somewhat. And if, I don't know if you could really even count Maleficent, which is more of its own side story, but those movies kind of did that.
Yeah.
They're mostly, well, I think they mostly, oh, you know what, Aladdin had songs in it, though.
Yeah, Aladdin had all the songs. Like, it was it was pretty... It was a close to right shot for shot in a lot of ways. I think... I'm talking off mic. I think what I come down to is Mulan is the closest I want to something like where basically it's an entirely new story in a lot of ways. Like, it takes the general basics, but, like, the movie, the animated movie and the movie are very, very different.
Yeah, so different that you might be... Well, maybe not, because I know people did, but it's less easy to compare them and say, oh, the movie fails to do the charm of the cartoon, if the movie's not even trying for that, really.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the part of the problem. When I went and rewatched Aladdin, I was like, oh, you know what? This is a perfectly solid movie if the anime one didn't exist, but the anime one is better in every way. Like, it really is. Like, all the songs are better. Nobody's going to be like, I like Will Smith better than Ron Williams. Nobody's saying that.
Maybe this is for the people who hate animation.
Well, those people don't need anything.
Well,
but,
I mean, I'm
but
just
there's
saying.
Not that big a crowd for it. Like, I know that the people, the families going to see it are people who have liked it And I think they are just looking for a fun and interesting retelling of it. Nick, let me ask you specifically about Little Mermaid, which, you know, by the way, does look visually lush.
Oh, it looks
the
beautiful.
The acting
yeah.
look good. The weirdly Javier Bardem, a.k.a. so Anton Chigurh, a.k.a. Stilgar from Dune,
yes.
is her father.
King Trite.
But, Nick, what do you think? Like, do you have an interest in this? Are you going to see it?
I probably will. I think it looks better than some...
Why, Nick? Why?
Because I have a fondness for Little Mermaid, and I like the story. And
so you do have, like, an interest in seeing the story retold in a different way.
Yeah, well...
Even if it's only a little different?
Yeah, this is akin to, like, I went and saw Aladdin on the Broadway musical.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely has all the songs, but it changes things up. And, yep. and takes away some things, adds things.
Yep.
And... But still at its core, it's still Aladdin.
Yeah.
And I feel like the best sort of live-action remakes have stayed true to the story while mm-hmm. reinventing slightly. I might be one of the few people who liked the Cinderella one.
You might be.
I remember thinking it was solid.
Who was, all right. was there it was Kenneth Branagh who directed it, and it
who was...
Who
was the actress? Or was it anybody?
Oh, crap, I forget who the actress was.
It's okay.
That was many moons ago.
Yes. It may have been as long ago as...
I'm thinking Beauty and the Beast. I actually thought 12 years.
See, and again, I thought Beauty and the Beast was a solid remake.
They're all solid. That's the thing.
No, they're not all solid. There are some really bad... Lion King is awful.
But in general, there's like... I mean, it's Disney money, and they get good people to do it. Like, it's all good. But not one of them is better than the animated one.
Well, you know, like, I'll occasionally get into this argument with people who are fans of, like, Broadway musicals,
yeah.
where sometimes I've only seen, like, the version that's, like, the movie version. I don't have Broadway musical money.
Right.
so I've seen, like, Les Mis and Chicago and stuff like that, and I know a lot of times the voices and stuff don't compare. And I'll say, like if we're going to actually go ahead and talk about it honestly, I will say that, like, I think there's things that they do with the visuals in these movies, with, say, Les Mis and stuff yeah. like that, that are... I'm not going to say it's better than the Broadway thing or anything like that, but that they do have qualities that that people maybe don't account for. You know, you can do close-ups with cameras. You can do sort of more... visually nuanced scenes than you can on a theater where people are watching from like 100 feet away,
yeah.
100 yards away.
Yep.
And you can take, there's lots of cool stuff to be had in that. So I can, you know, appreciate that, like, you know, just a different but similar version of the same story could still be good. I, like, watch lots of versions of Hamlet and lots of other Shakespeare movies or plays just because it's interesting to see how they do it different.
Yeah.
I watch every single MCU thing that comes out, so I've got no room to cast stones here.
Did you say MCU?
MCU, yeah.
Yeah, although those aren't remakes, per se. They even the stories they take from the comics are very different.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to see some of the cast people and how they do their... I mean, like, the...
Sebastian the Real Crab?
The Real Kirk Crab, voiced by David Diggs.
Now, I did see Sebastian, someone saying that Sebastian, they picked the one crab that's like a land crab to be their water crab because he has the weird eye thing.
Yeah, that's funny.
And I like Melissa McCarthy. I don't think she chooses great films, but she's really fun. She's really fun. And you know, as Ursula,
yeah, I
think she'll...
I am not a fan of Melissa McCarthy.
No.
Yeah.
But when I have a glimpse of her portrayal of Ursula, which looks pretty much like it's adhering to the cartoon, you know, it's in that very strong ballpark, looked good. Looked fine.
Yeah. I think, Randy, you were annoyed by Awkwafina as Scuttle.
I am annoyed, yes, because Buddy Hackett was a great Scuttle. I love Awkwafina, but that's not who I want to cast.
Buddy Hackett is for Granddad's generation, Randy.
I guess. I am Granddad's generation now.
I also see that Lin-Manuel Miranda is playing Le Chef Louis.
That's fun.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
I don't know. I
wasn't the original one René Auberjonois?
I believe
AKA
it was.
Odo, aka Odo. What's his name from Benson?
Yeah. Yes.
For Granddads out there.
I think these are easy to knock down, but I mean...
They are.
And rightly so in some cases.
But Nick, would you say that the majority of them that you've liked?
I
that'd be fair to say.
Yeah, I would say I enjoyed. Yeah.
There seems to be a silent, perhaps even majority, that is enjoying these movies, even though critically they get sort of lambasted. Okay.
I believe if I had to letterbox these, they would be about 2 to 3, depending on which. Right. 2 to 3 stars.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. What's the highest rated one for you?
I think it would have to be...
I think Jungle Book is Jungle for me, Book approaching is... 4 stars.
Yeah, Jungle Book is Jungle close. Book's
really
good.
Have to,
I don't know if it's quite 4 for me.
Yeah, that might be a stretch.
I don't know, Christopher Walken...
It's weird, though, that they made some weird choices, too, like to have him get the one song in it.
Yeah.
But I like it.
So here's the thing. I can't argue against... It's great. They cast a lot of great people. They spend a lot of money on it. The music is still great. Like, I understand why these are successful. What I don't understand, and I don't even understand this too. Like, I want to say I don't understand why Disney makes them. I know what it is. The answer is money. It's that thing they like.
Yeah. They do like money.
Yeah. Yeah, I was saying to Randy, I think that the reason that they would, do some of these is that it is a sort of guaranteed revenue. There is a guaranteed nostalgia to Little Mermaid that there's really not quite for some other properties that they would do, or if they did. Even like I do think that they should do Atlantis, by the way. I think
that
one has a strong cult following and would be like could be amazing translated visually.
Yeah.
And they could change it up a little bit, find a few new things about it. But they've leaned into the ones that are the easy money makers.
Yeah.
But they're probably about due Atlantis, I bet.
Maybe. They want to get their hooks into a new generation.
Yeah.
Because
well, what's ingenious
some of those
about
new
it,
generations are like, oh, those old cartoons are dumb.
That's true. That's true. And I will say this, like, I have seen that, you know, Randy, you and I love the original Little Mermaid, but these sort of lessons of it, you know, start to become more and more awkward over time. The 16-year-old girl who marries the first person she's in love with. And has to give up her gift to do it. I know that in this movie they are going to tweak some of that stuff.
Yeah,
they are going to modernize it so that it feels less kind of creepy at times. I don't know what point I was trying to make.
My point would be if you're going to tell me that if anyone comes to me like, I can't wait for the live action the Little Mermaid cartoon is dumb. That person getting slapped. And rightfully so.
But if it's a little child?
Sorry, kid.
Sorry, kid. Shouldn't have been wrong.
Rogue's Gallery, comics and child
comics
violence.
Comics, games, and child slaps. You know, just shouldn't have been wrong.
Teach your kids well, parents.
That's right. Teach them to have respect for the Disney cartoons.
Once again, we are the muscle men for the mega corporation Disney. They've never made any bad
choices.
That's
right. Disney only does things that are good.
Yeah.
Yes. Never anything bad at all. All right. Michael B. Jordan is apparently planning a Creed TV and movie universe for Prime.
Sure.
I know that it had a very successful opening week with his, and he stars in, but also directed this time.
Yes,
yes.
He did.
That is, I guess the wheels must have already been in motion on this, or they got good vibes from test audiences or something to be ready to make this call so quickly.
There's nothing specific about it. It's just like clearly a.
Well,
he
already has a pretty strong relationship with Prime. He did that Tom Clancy show.
Right.
So he's definitely already got some ties in at Amazon. So this sort of makes sense. I need to sit down and actually watch Creed. Creed 1 and 2. Kang in the third one looks great.
I can say that the original Creed I thought was really good.
I like Creed.
Because it's Michael B. Jordan, Sylvester Stallone, and what? Tessa Thompson?
Tessa Thompson is great in it. It's one of those roles where it's like, oh, yeah, she could have just been a love interest, but she's actually got some real depth of character.
Yeah.
Everybody brings something to that. Stallone was great in it.
I do rewatch it.
And it's honestly, it's because Ryan Coogler directed it, and I was like, oh, man, that combo of Coogler and Michael B. Jordan, I was like, the second one didn't have Coogler on it, and I was like, it's almost inevitably going to, like, bring down, and I don't want it to be bring down the first movie for me, so I skipped it. But most people are telling me it's at least pretty good.
Yeah, and the 3 is supposed to be great.
And the 3 is supposed to be really good, and so, yeah, I'm like, okay. This is kind of the history of the Rocky movies. They are all, like, very watchable, with the possible exception of 5.
I've been told by one of my friends, who's not a super judgmental person in general,
yes,
is, like, he has warned me several times against 5. He's like, just read a Wikipedia, you don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, it almost makes me want to.
I don't know if I've watched 5.
I don't think
I know. That's the one where his kid street fights.
I've only seen 3 and 4. My Rocky history is a little rocky.
Yeah.
and you have seen Creed. One?
That's 4.
4 is great.
Is it?
4 is great in quotes.
Great 3... for Nick as a child.
Yes. It was great when I saw it in my commie-hating 80s days.
Yes. I think of the two of those, by the way, 3 is great. That's the one where Apollo trains him.
Is it great?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Are you just great for Randy and Dave of that age?
No, I think it actually is, and, like, they, you know, all the Rocky movies have sort of a formula. Literally, they, like, kind of embody a formula. But there's that
montages.
One was Good the one. Sort of, I think the first time they started kind of referencing their own continuity, which usually kind of is a not a great mark.
Yeah.
Like, when Star Wars is, like, too into itself, it can sort of be just kind of... It can lose any relevance, you know, whatsoever. But when he had to go back and Rocky gets his ass beat by Mr. T,
yep.
And he has to go back to his old foe Apollo Creed from yep. the first one and call on him to train him because Mickey's died, that's some good drama there.
That's true.
And they do get a lot out of it. It had Eye of the Tiger in it.
It did.
Mr. T was a good, worthy foe. He attacked Rocky's manhood in the press conference, Randy.
Well, you know, Rocky IV did have James Brown and Coming to America.
It did. I don't know if you remember, but the crazy American funk enraged Ivan Drago because he was, like, on this crazy cocktail of steroids.
Right.
And it, like, drove him mad.
He was a super soldier.
And that's why he had to kill Apollo Creed,
yes.
If he dies, he dies. There is a reason we remember these things. It is a fun schlocky movie.
Man.
Yeah.
It actually is Stallone's son in Rocky V. Sage Stallone.
Yeah, maybe not the greatest.
Oh well.
Did either of you watch Rocky Balboa?
Like, yes. No, I heard it's good.
It is good. Was that the last one before Creed?
Yes,
it's good. If it had been the very last one, it would have been a solid ending.
But that's. I mean, so you're telling me. That of 9 movies, like, 1 is disappointing and all the rest are good. That's a pretty
yes.
good track record.
That's what I would say.
The same record as Scream, pretty much.
There's only 6 Screams.
I know, but only one of them is bad.
They're getting up there. Yeah. Yeah. It's
better than Star Wars.
Rocky has what you call a very watchable track record. It's not always what you call an ambitious series.
Yeah.
But I'm not even, like, a sports guy or anything like that, and I still like most of these movies.
Man, is Star Wars majority bad?
No,
what is it?
It's had too much TV and
but movie trilogy wise, because there's what, like,
6 10? out of the 9 are good.
There's 10. You got Rogue One. You got Solo.
Okay, 7 out of the 10. Okay, 8 arguably. Out of 10.
Okay,
or 8 out of 10.
I like more of the sequel trilogy than most people like. But I suppose I could potentially give a thumbs down to all the prequels.
Yeah,
and. At least one. Like, I think the final in the sequel trilogy, even though there was a fair amount I liked in it, I could give it a thumbs down.
When I rewatch the prequel trilogy, I have to give the Phantom Menace, like, a thumbs down.
Yeah.
It's only because of the Clone Wars, Nick. You've been swayed.
But the second and third ones, after rewatching them, there was some pretty good stuff in there.
The second one is the worst of them.
The romances, but there are some other good.
No.
Obi-Wan as investigators.
That movie is borderline unwatchable.
Obi-Wan as investigator is good.
And I actually
C-3PO,
like all
when he
stuff.
Gets his head swapped with a battle droid.
That stuff
is maybe the low point of all Star Wars.
No, sand. I hate sand. It gets everywhere. Is the low point of Star Wars.
Oh, we're not going to even bring up Jar Jar.
Oh wow! Yeah,
don't be mean to Jar Jar.
I'm not being mean to the actor.
No,
the actor.
But
leave
character.
Him alone. The character?
Yes.
I can run with the
Randy's Jar Jar. Nick is Jar Jar fan number 1.
Let me ask you a
true?
Question. Are you an angel?
kid went on to do nothing.
I'm saying, oh no, he went on to get really.
I like that in our drowsiness and weirdness today that we have been like that this is all like Disney and Star Wars infighting. We're like,
and Rocky?
Let's have a serious discussion about Disney remake cartoon money grabs and whether Star Wars is more suck than rock.
Hey, I'm gonna point out though, it's kept us awake.
That's true. That's true. Also, my blood is boiling.
We're not going to remember this podcast. We didn't record that.
Yeah, right.
I do want to say, just for the record, I believe in thinking about it, my Star Wars record is 50-50. I think I like 5 of them and dislike 5 of them.
So you like all 3 originals?
I like all 3 originals.
And what are the other 2?
I like Force Awakens.
Yep.
And I like Solo.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. You weren't a Rogue One guy.
I don't like Rogue One. I don't like the prequels.
There are people who are like, Rogue One is the best Star Wars movie that's ever been made.
Those people are wrong. Those people also love Andor.
I like
two.
I like Last Jedi and I like Force Awakens. The last one is a little bit of a letdown.
I don't love Last... I would put Last Jedi and Rogue One could tilt into the I don't hate them place.
Maybe when you're in a Star Wars mood.
When I'm in a Star Wars
Next time it happens.
Yes.
I feel like I've become a...
Probably a couple days, really.
I feel like I've become a lover of all things Rian Johnson as well.
I mean, I love Rian Johnson, but...
And his interpretation of...
Last Jedi is the exception, just like Shane Black used to be. I love everything except the exception of Iron Man 3. Shane Black's had more and more exceptions as time goes on. Rian Johnson, Last Jedi seems to be the outlier.
Was Shane Black... Did he also have the massive exception that was Predator?
Yes.
Was Predator or whatever.
Everything he has done since...
Either of you watched that?
Good God, no.
I press play. That's very sad.
No, since Iron Man 3, I think... I don't even really like
Monster Squad or Last Action Hero. So,
yeah. Well, those are both good movies.
No, Dave's right. Dave's right. When you team up with Fred Decker, it's not as good. And also, Last Action Hero is not good.
It's a lot of fun.
It's okay.
It's a lot.
I saw it on one of my birthdays. It was a birthday movie.
Sorry.
For me.
Dave, if you're about to ask me what we were talking about, I have no idea.
It started with Creed, but why were we talking about Creed?
Because Michael B. Jordan is planning a Creed TV film universe.
So
all we know about that is that they're talking about it. Like they won't even comment on it.
Randy, you've seen the least Rocky. Nick and I have seen like an equal amount of Rocky, maybe one or two more extra
you've seen
for me.
More.
I'm the Rocky champion of knowledge here. I'm the keeper of the lore.
Right, how do you make a Rocky TV show?
I don't know, first of all. But this is a Creed TV show, right?
Yes, the Creed universe.
Okay, so
I don't know... Which is the Rocky universe because it's the continuation.
It's true. The way the Rocky formulas work is, in general, somebody who he loves has to die or be sick, and then he has to overcome the odds. This means he's killed off most of the supporting cast over the course of the movies.
Here's what I would
do. But now you have 10 episodes.
Based on the Creed that I've seen... I would have Adonis Creed open a gym, and you would follow the different fighters as he's trying to get whoever. And there'd be a little back and forth, like which one is going to become the champion that they're going to put forward as their contender.
So he's already no longer a contender.
No, I think this is after he becomes. I think this is after he's won again.
Okay.
I think he becomes he's doing a gym for like the up and comers. Like he's training them.
Seems like something he might do. You know, one of the things I loved about Creed is how much it plugged into modern day Philly vibe.
Yeah.
They did some neat rethinks on sort of the stuff from the original Rocky, which one day you'll see, Randy.
Yep.
No, you won't.
But
to my plans.
I do think you lean into fun Philadelphia culture and all of that stuff. I do like the idea of him as trainer and what I'm trying to think is like it can't always be like world championship.
But
it's a great format to do where with a sort of a big bad at the end, somebody you got to face.
Yep.
I would almost do a thing where there is like both a. Like a championship that he's like training somebody for, that doesn't have to be like the biggest championship in the world.
Right.
It can be some smaller thing, but there's I think there needs to be like a personal side. There's got to be like somebody that's like an old foe of his, you know, some like somebody who he's got to take on for some reason, even if theirs was just a charity match or something.
You could
like
also
that.
Cobra Kai this thing where there's like another gym and they're having to deal with that. Also, here's my other pitch.
Yep.
Creed is recruited by a time traveling organization to go and fight people throughout history. So he's going to go and he's going to go box Adolf Hitler
first up,
And then he's going to box a Velociraptor, and then he's going to box Franz Ferdinand, the Archduke
from the song from the band Franz Ferdinand,
and then battle Ludwig Beethoven.
He will fight. He will actually. He's going to fight. He's going to fight Salieri on behalf of Amadeus Mozart. This is my other pitch.
Do you know the thing that in the latest Creed movie, it's supposed to have taken some visual influence from the fights in Dragon Ball Z?
I did not know this. Yeah. I did see him talking about this.
Yeah. Michael B. Jordan is like a big nerd for Dragon Ball. Yeah. As pretty much every kid who grew up in the 90s, as far as I know, was.
Yeah.
Never got it.
But I'm curious to see how that movie visually does that, because I know people probably don't get punched into orbit. I don't know this for sure.
We haven't seen it.
But there must be some aspect of it that is drawn from that cartoon.
Yeah.
Maybe he goes Super Saiyan. I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know what Super Saiyan is, but he does it.
You get big hair, I think.
Yeah.
Neat.
It's over 9,000. One last thing.
Yes.
The Batman Caped Crusader animation, which was done by J.J. Abrams, this was supposed to be sort of a continuation of the original animated series. Like, they were going to do the original voice cast. Kevin Conroy was going to be Batman.
Yeah.
It got canceled HBO Max in the wake of various HBO Max things, and has moved to Prime now. Okay. So they are going to do it.
How?
I don't know. They're going to have to get a new Batman.
Well, no. I mean, licensing, that doesn't make sense. Prime Warner Brothers.
Prime HBO Max must have shipped it around or something like
that. That's so weird.
Well, I mean, it makes sense on balance sheets. This goes from a thing they're paying for to a thing they're being paid for.
I guess.
I mean, it makes sense.
This is the one where in the preview art I've seen, it looks like Batman from how he looked in 1939.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's got the kind of the ears, I'm going to say drifting ears, drifting apart. But
does he have the purple gloves?
I don't think he has the purple gloves, but I think he's got the look of that suit where it made him almost look more pulp. Yeah. Right? He looks like more of a pulp vigilante.
I hope he uses guns.
He's just plugging guys away.
For fitting in for his kind.
I hope that if that's the case, that I hope Todd McFarlane introduces it like he did his 90s Spawn show.
I am Todd McFarlane. I created Spawn. If you never want to put a Batman.
But so that's happening?
Sounds like it's happening.
Was Bruce Timm involved in this, did you say?
I think so. J.J. Abrams is the lead guy.
It's going to be a mystery box.
A mystery box. Who is Batman? We don't know.
Who killed his parents? I wonder who it is. It's Joe Chill.
It's Joe Chill. It's always Joe Chill.
Sometimes it's Joker.
Sometimes it's Joker.
Joker Chill.
Yeah.
Maybe Joe Chill is Joker.
That's what I was just saying.
Yeah. All right.
I'm tired.
We're going to take a break from this extended weird news sequence.
We're going to pause for a Joker Chill.
We're going to pause for a Joker Chill. And then we're going to come back and talk about a board game, a TV show, and a movie, respectively. Let's get us back on track, and let's talk about something the store actually does, which is board games.
Okay.
Dave, you have been talking about the Dune Imperium board game for a while, wanting to play it.
Yep.
I played it at BGG a couple years ago.
Yep.
And loved it and bought it and have played it like one or two times since. Our staffer John has played it and bought it recently and really liked it. So we were like, let's play Dune Imperium.
Yes. I was actually prompted because a customer was telling me about it, and he reminded me that there is a deck building game component to it, and I like deck building games. They're very approachable. There's a neat aspect of deck building games where you kind of, they have like a learning arc that your hand always starts out with not many cards, you build it up, and I was like, oh, this is neat. You kind of almost can learn as you go with a deck building game. Yeah. Now, this is a more complex game than that, but the how-to video psyched me out more than it should have.
I know, I shouldn't have sent you that one, I guess.
Yeah, that one, it was just one of those ones where, you know, we just dove into the game, more or less. And that was the way to go, because if y'all had told me how every single thing worked, I'd rather just play, a game that's let's stumble around game.
Right. I mean, you'd rather play a game, learn it, and just lose horribly while you play it.
Right. Or, in my case, win.
Or come from behind and win and crush me.
Yes. it was actually pretty exciting because it was a super last-minute win, but it was not like... It wasn't like I had zero strategy. I was starting to figure out some things by the end while you and John were fighting each other constantly and wearing your forces down, not ready for the guy to come from behind.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Dune.
Dune Imperium. Dune Imperium, you play, you have a faction.
Yep.
Dave was playing Atreides, John was playing Harkonnen, and I was playing another house that's like an espionage house.
Yeah, it's one of the ones that I'm not going to be able to name it. Obscure one from just referenced in the books, I bet somewhere.
Yeah.
But your powers were cool. What I noticed, it, like from afar, I didn't see exactly how all your powers worked. But there's some intrigue cards, yes. I think, that you were able to draw, and you were able to do a lot of little neat last minute stuff, like, oh, I'm going to call in some extra forces. I'm going to do this or that.
Well, one of the main things that my guy, each house has two people.
Yes.
And you choose which one you're using, and one is a little easier and one is a little harder. I took the more complex one.
Yes.
Which actually worked out for me. But you have a power that you can use, you know, once per turn or whatever.
Yep.
And the Atreides power, which you have, which is very cool, which I really like, is you can always know what the top card of your deck is. Like, you always know the next thing you're going
to
draw.
Right. This is obviously a reference to Paul's prescience.
Yeah.
His ability to see future events. So, yeah, I can always sneak a look in. They can't do it.
The Harkonnens, I think, can throw more things into combat. There was some kind of heavy combat. Like, they got forces more easily.
Yeah, I don't quite remember, but I think that was the gist of it. He was specifically playing Beast Raban.
Yes.
And so I think he was, like, able to, like, he got extra resources to, like, start with, I think.
Yeah.
Which represented them, like, kind of squeezing the planet for every bit they can get out of it. It's all very thematic, and what I will say of this is that this game really impressed me as far as, like, how Dune it was.
So, yeah, in addition to the deck-building aspect, which is very similar
to...
There's five cards. You buy a card. You get cards. You add your
if you've ever played deck. DC deck-building, Dominion, Star Realms, any deck-building game, you know that side of the game. But there's also a worker placement side.
Yeah, so there is a... you're placing people on the board to gain resources, to gain spice, to gain water, which is a resource, to gain Solari, which is their money. And also... On the left side of the board, there is an influence of, like, five factions or four factions?
I think it's four.
And it's the Fremen of Dune.
Right, the Bene Gesserit, you know, sort of the witch women.
The Emperor.
Emperor, and is it the Spacing Guild?
And the Spacing Guild.
Yeah, those are the guys who transport stuff between ships. In the books, I've seen more than you can sort of glimpse in the movies.
Yeah.
There is always, like, a balancing act to be had between them. You can't always act overtly against one, you know, any particular faction without potentially offending the others. So there's a lot of sort of duplicity going on. It's,
And you gain...
Very Game of Thrones-ish.
You play
and stuff.
Cards, you go to their space, you get something, and then you gain influence with them. And if you gain enough influence, you become, like, favored by that house. And that gives you a bonus. And you're trying to get a certain number of victory points within 10 turns. There's also a combat. Every turn, there is you're building forces towards some kind of abstract, like there's a battle going on somewhere.
Right. And it makes sense. So what you do on each given turn is, you know, in addition to whatever stuff you want to get done with your... You usually start out with sort of two things you can do.
Yeah, two actions.
You have everybody... Every house has two agents. You're going to send them somewhere and do what it says. And that sounds simple, but there's some neat little machinations within that. And then at the end of the round, there'll be some combat potentially, and you'll buy some more cards.
Yeah.
So it does if it sounds like a lot of stuff, you're still basically just sending out two guys
really
per round.
Really straightforward, yeah.
But there's a lot of neat stuff within it, and like you said, you'll flip over a card that'll show, like, oh, what's going to happen? What is the combat for this turn? And sometimes it's a good prize, and sometimes it's a great prize.
Yeah, sometimes you get, like, you can gain control of a planet for a while, which means anytime anyone uses that space, they have to pay. You get paid a little bit.
Yep. Yeah. And then sometimes you can just straight get victory points.
Yep.
There is also a second and third place sort of thing, so that if you can only manage to muster enough to realize you'll be second place in combat, that sometimes is worth it.
Yeah.
Which is a neat idea. You know, it means that it's not always just like a winner-take-all sort of thing.
Right.
There's some neat little nuances within that. Like, if you tie, nobody can get first place. You have to tie first, and you have to take the second place prize.
Yep.
There's also some neat stuff because, like, when you use your troops like that, you diminish your garrison of troops and for future options, which is why once or twice I let you guys fight it out, and then I would, like...
all our troops, then you can take the next
one. I could take the next one, relatively uncontested. But there's some neat, like, an intrigue I think you played one time, Randy, was one where you could withdraw your troops at the last minute.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, man, I ain't going to win this one. Let's save the troops.
Back to the garrison, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
The little cards really, really change things. It's a really fun, and it also, just like the Firefly board game and a few other board games, it gives you a sense, it feels like Dune. Like, you can feel a story forming the way we do it.
Totally. And like, you know, we are using the rare resource of water, which is extra valuable specifically on Arrakis. There's, you know, you can have spice, but like, oh, I can't use this spice immediately to buy my way into the Spacing Guild, but I can have it turned into Solari with one of my turns, and that will get me into the Spacing Guild. And so what I was generally doing as I slightly stumbled around trying to figure the game out is, like, I would usually be like, okay, I know I want to do this, and this requires me to have spice or Solari or some resource or influence.
Yep.
And I'd be like, okay, how do I get that influence? Okay, I can look on the board and I can see what I need to do to get that. So that just became my goal, and I'd sort of focus on that.
Yeah.
There was a kind of a the other neat thing is the buying of new cards near the end of the rounds.
Yeah.
The cards you use have a secondary function.
Right.
The better a card is, the more buying power it also has. So if you can manage to not use it during during your two agent turns,
you can use it to buy new cards.
You can use it to buy more stuff at the end. So there's a reason to sometimes to hold on to those, and then you can buy like some great stuff, like a big agent, like who is it, Stilgar, or who else is there in there?
I'm trying to remember.
Duncan Idaho.
Yeah, absolutely. All of the big names in it are people.
There was also the Kwisak Haderach, which showed up, and I used my ability to take off the board.
Oh yeah, this was cool. Basically, if Randy saw a card that he didn't want anybody to have except himself, maybe
I got to reserve one card, and I could buy it for one less that turn, or it went away.
Yeah,
and so sometimes like I knew I couldn't buy the card, but I'm like, I'll take this so that Dave doesn't get it because Dave was building a very Bene Gesserit army, and we were both sort of competing for interest with the Spacing Guild.
Yep.
It was also interesting. You were like 3 or 4 points for most of the game, as John and I are like moving up to 6 or 7 or 8. The game ends at 10 if you get there.
Yeah. Wild thing was, near the end, I was able to, in just like 1 or 2 turns, to raise my status, not as high as y'all, but I was able to raise my status with all 4 of the sort of the influencers.
Yep.
And even when you like only sort of get like halfway up that track or a third of the way up, you get a victory point.
Yeah.
So suddenly I got like 3 victory points out of that just very quickly moving up.
Yeah.
And then here's what was fun. It came down to a battle which I was able to tie Randy with, I guess.
Yeah, I had one intrigue card that I had 2 spice to power, and I could only get 1 spice in that last turn.
Right. And
so it's very close.
In the case of a tie in this game at the very end,
person
with the most spice wins, and I
had
just gotten some spice.
Yeah.
And in fact,
had a card that gave you 10.
Yes. Just
if you
like,
hadn't had that card. It was a very tight race. And I think John and I, like you say, John and I were battling each other, and you were kind of quietly moving up the
thing. No threat over here.
Yeah.
But,
it was
really fun. And it's one of those where you finish it and you're like, oh, man, I see all kinds of fun things I could have been doing. And so I want to, now that I know it, we're going to try and play again sometime soon.
Yeah, every time I played this game, I think I played it 3 or maybe 4 times. I just appreciate it more and more, I think. And we were saying, Dave, it's like 8.4 on Board Game Geek after being out for 2 years or so.
Yeah, it has like over 30,000 reviews, and it's still holding ridiculously high.
It is one of the great games.
I have to ask, are there sandworms?
There are sandworms. In fact, the first game I played, I won playing Atreides by having sandworms.
Oh, very cool.
I did not have any sandworms.
You didn't have any sandworms. They didn't come up as much.
John's explanation of the game is that he says it's the only game where he loses, he says, every time he plays it, but he still always wants to play it again.
Yeah.
High praise indeed.
It's really great. And there's 2 expansions. I know John's picked up one of them. I don't know too much about it, but I've heard both are pretty good. So, yeah.
High recommendation for Dune Imperium.
Dune Imperium. Nick, you and I was going to say we should revisit Poker Face.
Yeah.
This is the Peacock show starring Natasha Lyonne, run by Rian Johnson, and
starring pretty much everybody in Hollywood.
This was a near perfect season of television.
Yeah,
One episode I think is not as good as the rest, but it's still a good episode of TV.
Yeah,
and the finale was damn near perfect.
Yeah, the finale was really, really good. I didn't expect it to. I mean, I expected to like it. I didn't expect it to like it as much as I did.
So to give a quick recap for people who don't know, Poker Face is about Natasha Lyonne, who is playing a character named Kale, and she is her sort of weird gift is that she can tell when someone's lying.
Yeah,
they don't go too much into it. She's just like that. She's always been able to tell. Like since she was a kid, she knows when someone's lying. And she explains in the first episode that that's not always that useful because people lie all the time about stupid things.
And you don't know why they're lying,
and you just know that whatever they said was she'll call it. She'll say bullshit.
Yeah,
like
bullshit.
She's like, yes, someone will say something, and she knows it's bullshit. So as we join her in the first episode, she's working for a casino. And it becomes clear that the mob boss of this casino basically caught her cheating at cards, and rather than killing her, he like gave her another chance to work as a like a cocktail waitress at a casino run by his son, played by Adrian Brody.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of the first episode, Adrian Brody has Charlie's friend killed because she found out something she wasn't supposed to.
Right.
And so Charlie basically betrays him because she figures out what's going on, and he something happens that puts her in the square in the son's place, this mobster, and she basically has to go on the run.
Yep.
And he's like, basically, he tells her, and it's voiced by Ron Perlman.
Yep.
And he tells her, he's like, look, there's no off the grid, you can get away from me, you might as well just take your medicine. And so she goes on the road trying to avoid him. And in the course of 9 more episodes,
Which spans a year,
she goes around basically solving crime. She keeps running in, like Angela Lansbury in Murder, She Wrote, she keeps running into murders.
Yeah.
Like in small town America, and she's off the grid. She can't call the cops. She don't want to be involved with the cops because they'll find out where she is. So she has to keep moving, but she keeps finding these people, and she keeps like liking somebody and then helping solve either their murder or someone else that they care about their murder. And what's great about it is Rian Johnson directs at least 2 of them, maybe 3?
I think he does 4 total, because I think he did the first 3, and I think he did... Or no, he didn't direct the last one, so maybe just the first 3.
But it sort of is like a mini movie, because the first like 20 minutes, it starts and it shows you the murder. Like, it shows you what happened, introduces a bunch of new characters, and it's like a little mini movie that ends with a murder. And then... And then we see that Charlie was there at some point, and that she befriended one of the people, and it gets into how she solves or gets involved with it.
Usually by somebody saying something, she's like, bullshit.
It's wrong, and the formula changes as she goes on. Like, the formula for the penultimate episode with Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing a sort of ultra-scumbag, under-house arrest guy in the middle of a blizzard in Colorado is a very different riff on the formula.
Yeah, I feel like he usually plays nice guys.
He plays a scumbag in this one.
Oh no, he's really good at playing scumbags.
But the cast of this is... Nick Nolte's in it, Cherry Jones,
Stephanie
Nolte. Everything Everywhere All at Once. I haven't seen him do anything since he was an Ugnaught.
This is a reminder that Nick Nolte is a craggy old man.
He plays a good craggy old man.
But he's still a really good actor. I have really
Tim Meadows, Jamila Jamil. Trying to think who's Tim Meadows.
Who's the barbecue?
Randy
Rell.
It's got a great guest cast.
One of those
cast.
Shows I've been looking to one at some point. I want to check it out.
Well, people have called it sort of Fugitive meets Columbo. It's got a little bit of that. It's got a sense of humor. It's very funny.
It's extremely...
Natasha Lyonne is super winning in it.
It's extremely crowd-pleasing. I mean...
And then the finale, without getting too much into it, flips the script and shows us another character's point of view on what all has been going on in a sort of hilarious and dark way.
Yeah.
And sort of upsets her status quo in a new way, too. Because
he's almost like the bad guy, or the person chasing
her.
He's
the one armed man of the show in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
He's the guy chasing her down.
Who is that?
It's Benjamin Bratt.
Oh, okay. Huh.
But he does a great job.
It's really good. It's every episode, like... I mean, what you want from an episode of TV like this, you want every episode to stand alone as its own thing. It is less serialized than most TV. Like, yes, she is on... You know why she's on the run.
Right.
But, like, the question of, is he getting closer to that kind of thing, really doesn't enter into it that much.
That's good. One of the fun things about the Star Trek Strange New Worlds was that they deliberately did a retro format where they went back to a more episodic style. And it's not like they don't have serial elements in it. They've learned from a lot of things.
Yep.
Characters still grow and stuff. But you get a satisfying 40, 50 minutes of story, and it sounds like that's what they're doing here.
Yeah, every week you get a little mini movie.
Did you have a favorite one?
Man, it's tough. That finale is pretty great. I think the Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a heavy favorite for me too. But the Nick Nolte, Cherry Jones ones were really
good.
There's a lot of stuff I really liked in this. I also really like the racing episode, which flipped the format a little bit and had some interesting stuff.
That one was good too.
That had Tim Blake Nelson in it, and he was great in that. It's definitely worth watching.
If you've got Peacock,
so far,
if you have the means, I highly recommend it.
Yes,
this year we are in mid March, and we've got Last of Us, which just also wrapped really strong.
Yes,
Poker Face and Shrinking over on Apple Plus, all of which I think are contenders for best TV show of the year.
Yeah.
So, and I think Poker Face is a strong contender for it. So
that's so much good stuff. They don't even need any more TV for the rest of the year. Let's call it.
Well, now they're going to have like 700 more new television series.
Oops. All right, let's take a quick break. Let Dave escape so we can talk about Scream 6. All right, Dave has been excommunicated, and now we can talk about Scream 6. Spoiler warning: if you have not seen Scream 6, you should go see it. I think
Really
enjoyed it. It is my favorite of the Scream movies. And people should see it.
I think that's a bold statement to make.
I know, I'm aware. I will say, I'm aware that the problem with this is that Scream 6 can't exist with all the others, without all the other Screams.
Right.
So it's weird to say, this is my favorite, because you can't, like, I wouldn't be like, oh, it's my favorite, you should only watch this one, because it'll make no sense at all. Like, it would not work at all without the other Screams. But as a movie, this is my favorite one.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of larger than any of the Screams that have come before.
Yeah.
Most of the other Scream movies are very kind of... they're small scale in some ways, because it's all focusing on Woodsboro, a small town.
But you know what? To some extent, this also is small scale. Even though it is in New York City, it is still a small group of people. Ghostface isn't terrorizing Manhattan. He is...
I mean, there is a scene where he kills like three or four people. Yeah. Like in a bodega.
Sure.
It just feels like a little more... not Jason Takes Manhattan, where he's slashing everybody. But there are vibes of that.
Yeah. But I think in general, this is still like the core four.
The core four, yes.
The four people from that survived Scream 5, which is...
Jenna Ortega.
Jenna Ortega's Tara Carpenter, Melissa Barrera's Sam Carpenter, who is the daughter of Billy Loomis.
Billy Loomis, yes.
The original Scream, one of the original Scream murders. Jasmine Savoy Brown as Mindy Meeks Martin, and her brother Mason Gooding as Chad Meeks Martin, her brother.
Who are the nephews of Randy Meeks.
Who was the film geek, original film geek, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So I liked that they tell you exactly what all this is. This is a requel, so it's part sequel.
No, this
part
is a franchise.
Well, but Scream 5 was. Now this is a franchise.
Jasmine Savoy Brown, Mindy, is a film nerd. She's going to NYU for film school or whatever. And so she is the character. She is the Randy. She is telling us all the rules. There's a great scene where she sits and she's like, oh no, we're not in a requel anymore. We're in a franchise. She's playing out the rules for what it means to be in a franchise.
Yeah.
And
it was a great
it's
scene.
Great. It's super fun.
Actually, and also, I think this had one of the better openings that of Scream in a while.
Using Samara Weaving, who I love, who's a great Scream queen, and then using Tony Revolari from Spider-Man, the reveal of that, where it's like, oh, you know, usually it's Ghostface kills someone, call someone, kill someone. This is a slightly different tweak on that, and it is also to set up the real Ghostface of the movie.
Yep,
that the setup is a fake Ghostface.
Yeah, it was. It was a very unique and very fun way to start the film.
Yeah.
And then, we get sort of them trying to live normal lives. Unfortunately, that's not a possibility.
No.
Because the narrative has been sort of flipped on our lead character. And
I also like that there's a central story about Sam and Tara Carpenter that basically Tara wants to just, like, move on, forget about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And Sam is now, like, she's like, no, I'm going to protect you from our legacy, and I'm worried I'm a killer because I'm Billy Loomis' daughter and all that stuff. And also, I like that they're smart enough to be like, no, we're out of here. Like, we're not going to stay for this.
Right.
Like, we're going to go. And then, because they're implicated in a murder,
they
have
can't
to stay.
Go. Yeah.
Interesting how that worked out. And, of course, that was all part of the plan.
Yeah.
Which, you don't know at the outset, but of course, later on, you're like, oh, that makes sense. He wanted to keep them there, and he had a good way to keep them there.
Yeah.
There's some new characters. Dermot Mulroney plays Detective Bailey, whose daughter... Quinn is one of their roommates.
Yep.
And
there's a romantic interest who lives across the hall for the main character.
Did you recognize him?
I did, but I couldn't place
him. That is Pug from She-Hulk, sir.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yep, yep.
He was really good.
They brought back Kirby.
Kirby from Scream 3.
Kirby. I guess she's
Scream
sort
4.
Of like... She sort of had them bring her back. Like, she's like, hey, you never showed me get killed.
Right. I mean, I just rewatched Scream 4, and it does seem like she got killed, but nope. And she's now an FBI agent.
FBI agent, which I thought was a great... She's like a serial killer hunter.
Yeah.
Like, it's a great idea. And Hayden Panettiere, I always liked Hayden Panettiere.
Yeah.
She's particularly great as Kirby.
Yeah, I mean, I liked her in Heroes, yeah. But I like her here a lot better.
Yeah, I really liked her role in this. And I thought they did a good job of keeping us guessing the whole time. There's a... Especially six movies in, to be able to keep us guessing at, like, which one's Ghostface, and to fake us out a few... Because I never knew for sure who it was.
No.
Like, I was like, I could, literally could be anybody. They bring it up, they talk about it, they're like, well, it could be Tara or Sam. Maybe they snapped after the murders.
Yeah.
I'm like, man.
I was expecting a weird curveball, and I'll just say it. I was expecting it. Stu was still alive.
No, wow, that'd be weird.
they make reference to that, like, the idea that he never died in the movie, and I was like, oh, that would be really cool.
I did like the conspiracy thing. They said that Sam's boyfriend, who we know was the murderer,
yeah,
but that he was framed, that Sam is actually the one who killed everybody. Yep. Like, that little internet conspiracy was a fun modern idea. I like that they kept guessing. I like what they did with Gail. I'm sad that both Gail and Dewey are now dead.
No.
Didn't Gail die?
No, she was alive.
Oh, was she alive?
Yeah, at the very end they said she had a pulse, and they're taking her to the hospital.
Okay, so she did make it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. You can't kill Gail. She is the one that's been in every single one.
I like that they left the core four. I thought they were going to kill them off, and I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah. I've heard some behind-the-scenes thing. I guess one of the twins, not the female, the male, was supposed to have been killed in the last one.
Yeah.
Like in the original script.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So... But I really like what they've done with him, and like they're doing the relationship with Jenna Ortega, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah,
I think it falls squarely on the shoulders of Jenna Ortega and
Melissa Barrera.
Yeah, and they are good. They're
really, really good leads.
They're smart. They think. They're not dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And I will give it to the small cameo who plays her therapist. The World is Grey Jack from Clear and Present Danger.
Is that who that was?
Yes, that
I
was.
I recognize him.
Oh, man, I forget his actual name.
Henry Zerny.
Henry Zerny, who was also in Ready or Not. He was the father.
That's right.
So it was nice little Samara Weaving and his reunion. But it was a great little cameo. I loved this movie. There is an after credit sequence. It's nothing giant, but it's a lot of fun.
It's a goofy one, yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know if I wanted to make more, but I guess I do.
I think if you've made six films and only one is slightly mediocre, you'd
probably keep making them.
I think you keep making them.
Yeah.
And if the same directors and writers continue on, in sort of the tradition of Kevin Williamson and Wes Craven,
sure.
These people seem to have a good idea of what the Scream franchise should be.
Yeah, I agree,
and I'm excited.
Yeah, it was really fun. It is my favorite thing I've seen this year in the movie theaters.
Yeah,
it was really fun.
It is very good.
All right. That will wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.